Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Made it back once again. Happy day after Father's Day to you.
Yeah, hey, likewise, and the same. I gotta tell you that I think that I actually prefer Father's Day to my own birthday.
I had the exact thought over the weekend. I was like, you know what? I think this day is I was born, I don't know how much to do with that.
Right.
I feel like I've been,
That was more of a mom day.
Yeah, more of a mom day,
Way to go, mom.
I was like, I do a lot of work on this other thing, every day,
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, it was really cool. There was, I got ridiculously choked up and did not expect it at all. But cause I was even there for the original picture. And there's a chance we even talked about it on the pop last week, but there was a day where Addison was on our screened-in porch and she was coloring, and she kept asking me what comes next in the color of the rainbow. And so she would be like, what comes after orange? And then I'd be like, yellow. And then she would, she would go away, then come back, what comes after yellow? And so she did this really cool where she colored in the outside frame of the picture, and she kept coming in more towards the center with the different colors of the rainbow, and it was just really awesome. It was she wasn't just scribbling on a piece of paper and being like, look, I made you a drawing. It's right. she did a real thing. And so for Father's Day, Alice had gotten me these frames that you can interchangeable. It's got a door you can open, so you can put new artwork in.
I've seen these. Yeah.
And she came downstairs with two of them for me, and one of them had the rainbow drawing in it, from Addison. And I mean, I just immediately broke down into tears.
Aww.
I think it was just Addie's it's her artwork, and she doesn't know even, I think, the full significance of the rainbow to me, which is that she's my rainbow baby.
Right.
Because we miscarried before we had Addison. And so it was just this crazy full circle moment that I was Allie turned the corner and I saw what she was holding. And I mean, I just oh man, I just completely lost it.
Oh,
but,
man.
But in the best way though. It was just pure happy tears, And it was and it was great. The way Addie, she immediately saw that I had tears coming down my cheeks and stuff. And she jumped up on the bench next to me and just came and kissed me.
Aww.
And I was just man, this is so great.
What a great moment.
We had a good family group hug. It was so special and wonderful. So anyway, I was man, this is just the best.
That's nice. That's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, we're other than what we do here at work, dad is it is our most important role, is being a dad.
Yeah.
But it's crazy just kind of zero in and concentrated into a day where it's just sort of hey, look, you're doing good. You're doing well. So that felt really nice. Well, how did you guess Father's Day?
Oh, I mean, it was pretty good. Let's see. Luke had also made me a card, which was the first time maybe he's had much more intention about it, where he can write things and stuff.
Yeah, no, that's really big.
So he'd made me a very nice. Beth had gotten some card stock earlier in the week and for a different project she was working on. But then Luke was wait, I want a piece. And then he just disappeared upstairs and came back. And then he came back and was you can't have this until Father's Day. And I was okay.
Oh.
But then he gave it to me and he'd drawn four different pictures on the inside of me and him doing different things and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I know, it was very sweet. It was this is where you're laying in bed reading to me, and this is us playing video games together, and this is me watching you do stuff on the computer. And
oh
yeah.
This is me watching you do stuff on the computer.
I know.
That's That's adorable.
Yeah. So all very cute. That was really adorable. And then Beth made like blueberry muffins in the morning, which were really tasty. And then the kids had asked if we could have chocolate chip waffles. So then I went down and made chocolate chip waffles after the muffins.
Nice.
I was like, I don't know what you already promised them, but I made muffins. And I was like, all right, I guess I have to make waffles now. And then we all went and saw How to Train Your Dragon later in the day.
Yeah.
With like the whole family, which also I don't think I've ever really thought about it so much, but it's like it very much is like a father son kind of movie.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
Like I like as I was watching it unfold, I was like, I don't know if this is like on purpose or if it's intentional or anything that they released this film on like Father's Day weekend. Like
you don't see them capitalizing on that very often.
No, yeah. Certainly not. Yeah. So that was you're right. Like that was very interesting. And there's more than one like father-son dynamics that are like unfolding, you know, in the live action version that aren't even necessarily like in the animated version. But I mean, while we're talking about that, like I would almost love to talk about How to Train Your Dragon a little bit because we all went and saw it together as a big family. Our mom and dad were there with us and your whole family was there.
Yep.
Me, Allie, and Addie were there. And it was, I mean, just whenever you get to go to the movies as a family, you know, especially like kind of bringing some of those traditions, you know, to our children.
Yep.
It's like really just cool and special, and it really does demonstrate, I think, a little bit like how bustling and busy the world has gotten and how easy it is for like phones to sort of be like a part of, you know, every exchange on some level, even if they're not like being used, even like sometimes like just like sitting on the, you know, the counter or whatever. It's like they're there, they're present, you know. But there is something nice about going into like the dark room, and you know, there's like the etiquette of you know, respecting the other people there who are taking in the movie as well, which means that, you know, you're all doing something together, but you're all kind of like focused on that thing. So that was just in and of itself special. But then I personally walked away from the How to Train Your Dragon live action with sort of like a like flicker of hope that I feel like was lit within me for what I think has otherwise been like a kind of like exhaustive experience with live action remakes, you know, in the world of like, you know, animation meets you know, like having real actors and everything step in and
right,
be involved in portraying these characters and stuff. I mean, we've seen it in the past for sure with, you know, the MCU, the DCEU, where sort of like the superhero burnout kind of like is a real thing. And people sort of are kind of like, you know, maybe.
The superhero thing, it's like, you know, it occurred to me, someone asked us in a live stream last week if we'd seen Thunderbolts yet. And like, I have not seen it, but I know it got like pretty good reviews and stuff like that from what I saw. And I was like, it occurred to me, I was like, man, this is like the first, well, it's like, you know, then I was thinking like, oh, it's like the first time I didn't like go see a Marvel movie like the week it came out.
Oh, sure.
Which is like, you know, because we used to go see all of them, you know, just as like part of our job. And then I was like, that's not even true. I also haven't seen Captain America yet.
I know.
It's like, I haven't seen the last two, and it's like, it feels unheard of. But so I got it, you know, I do want to see them both, but I will say that in the trailers for How to Train a Dragon, there's like the full Fantastic Four First Steps trailer. Yes. And I was like, dude, that might bring people back because it looks so good. It looks so good. And you've got Pedro in there, like doing his thing.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's like Pedro Pascal has basically been hitting nothing but homers.
He's just crushing it lately, and it's like he's so pop. He's like, I think what Marvel's really hoping for is that Pedro's Reed Richards can like fill the void of like the
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Tony Stark.
You really need someone good, and then the real question though is that like Tony Stark sort of has like such a specific kind of presence that could like almost like an underlying, like not even underlying, just a straight up sassiness that I think brings a lot of like levity to what is otherwise sometimes very serious situations. But like Reed Richards, I like, that's like, it'll be curious to see how that character unfolds a little bit, because Reed does not seem quite as much like he's going to have a sense of humor.
It doesn't seem as much fun, especially because you've got Johnny there and he's like clearly the comic relief character in Fantastic Four.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but you're right. I agree. I think that that does, it looks promising. It gives a lot of hope. It definitely makes it seem like it could be a lot of fun. I love the styling that they're going with.
Yes.
It's like 70s,
like 70s, 60s. Yeah. Sort of look to it, because it's happening like in a different universe, which is also sort of nice because it's like, just nothing else is there. This is just its own thing right now. Obviously, it's not going to end that way. They're going to cross over and be part of the rest of it. But
Right. They will inevitably come over. But I agree. It looks really cool. But So then seeing How to Train Your Dragon, I was really, really mixed going into this movie, because I love the original How to Train Your Dragon. I love the whole series, really. I mean, it does a great job of like tugging at your heartstrings and kind of like going there sometimes, so to speak. And it was like when I saw that they were doing a live action remake and that they were bringing like Gerard Butler, who voices Stoic the Vast in the original, you know, animated series. And he was just going to come back and embody Stoic again, you know, you're kind of like, oh, that's cool. Cause it's been, I mean, I don't even know how long
I know
since the original came out. And, you know, obviously, Gerard Butler is 300.
Yeah. He was in 300. Yeah.
So you know, he can be a big guy,
right?
Like, but it has been a while since that happened. So, you know, there's like cool little things like that. But then when I was watching the trailers, I mean, for one, they looked beautiful, which I was kind of like, okay, that's reassuring.
Yep.
But there was a flavor about it that was like very shot for shot per the animated series. And so then that sort of like, at first to me, it was like a stall. I was almost like, okay, it's cool to see like the scene where like Hiccup reaches his hand out to touch Toothless, and they kind of have like their first like moment of connection. Like that iconic moment, you were like, of course, that needs to be.
Right. Yeah, you gotta have that.
You gotta have that. And so like, I mean, you could play those two scenes side by side. I'm sure that there's, you know, TikToks and Reels and YouTube videos that have done this to prove how exactly similar the choreography, the spacing, the positioning, the framing of the shot just simply is. So then I'm sitting there wondering to myself, I'm like, well, if it's just like a shot for shot remake, like, do we need that? You know, it's like, it's the age old question, you know, like that everybody seems to be asking lately, where it's like, who's asking for these remakes, and are they just cash grabs from studios because it's like a way to take a very well-known franchise and hope that it scores big at the box office. And it's kind of like, you know, boom, bam, you know, get some star power in there,
right?
You know, like whatever, like people, it'll be fun. People will go and see it. It's like a popcorn flick. And what I thought was really interesting about How to Train Your Dragon in live action format is that it follows the original story, I mean, really, really, really closely.
Yeah, I mean, like almost to a T. It's almost frame for frame the same. The only there was like, and the things they added were like, they were all good things, I thought.
Yeah.
Like really the main things I thought they added were Astrid's parents and Snotlout's parents.
Yep.
Right. They added that. And then they have like one little, like the big war room meeting at the beginning of the movie, Stoic is explaining how, you know, it's the same scene. They just change it a little bit because normally he has to convince the rest of the tribe, like, we need to go attack the dragons. We need to go into the fog and look for them or whatever. And they're like, no, we shouldn't do it. And he's like, this time he reminds everyone that we all came from different Viking tribes and came together to get rid of this problem. And like, so that's the main difference, is that like Burke is a collection of several Viking tribes instead of just one singular group of people.
Yes.
And like that's about it. And, you know, then which then lends the whole island to just being a much more diverse place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it worked splendidly. But then otherwise, like it was remarkable to me how many of the same jokes and gags and everything that they just kept perfectly intact.
Yeah.
And so here was kind of my major, like while I was watching it, I was like, God, this is really, like, this is really fun. This is like really engaging and really cool to watch. And so like, I'm wondering to myself, what is it? Because it's not that different from the story I already know. Like, you, I mean, it's like to the point where you could almost just take all of the dialogue from one and place, or from the live action, place it under the animated and have the same movie. No problems whatsoever. And the thing I kept comparing it to in my head was that it reminded me of Broadway. Like, if you were to go and see, like, The Lion King or Aladdin or Frozen or what else, you know, has been like a, like an adaptation, on Broadway, what you're going to see though is this wonderful spectacle. But like, if Zazu from The Lion King is on stage and you see that there is a man in like a skin suit, basically voicing the puppet of Zazu, you and the audience are not sitting there thinking like, wow, it's like they trained a real bird to do it. Like, that's not what's happening.
Yeah, like you know what's going on. You can see the guy right there.
You can see the guy right there. And what you're doing is you're sort of like, this is part of the performance. And so then, you know, the voice acting, the delivery and everything from Zazu becomes like a much bigger part versus like their physical acting, or maybe even the physical acting is just as big. It's just the mastery of the puppeteering,
right,
is then what makes the character fun. But like, that's the point though. It's like, you can see straight through to how they're doing it, and it doesn't take away from the experience at all, because it's part of what you're supposed to be getting with a stage play. So what I thought was really cool about this was that like, there were certain characters, Gobber, right?
Yeah. Gobber.
So is played by Nick Frost.
Yes. And who's going to play Hagrid.
He's going to play Hagrid. Yeah. And he is the, like the best friend of Stoic the Vast. And he's kind of like the guy who's got like the interchangeable, he's got like a peg leg and like the interchangeable arms. And he like works at the shop with Hiccup. So he's kind of got like a
mentor kind of role.
A little bit. Yeah, exactly. And like, when you look at him and like the suit that he's wearing, it's like, it doesn't look like he's so big as to fill in the suit. Like, it's almost like a comically large suit that he's wearing. Like, the like pegged arm that he has, like that might be like a hammer or a hook or whatever, like, it looks comical. It doesn't look practical at all.
Right.
You know, like, so it's not like attempting to make like a hyper realistic version. It's almost like a cartoonized variation of a live action performance. And to me, I felt like that was like its own unique way to bring the story to life. Like animation sometimes lends itself to the opportunity of doing things that we can't do.
Right.
Like, because we don't have dragons.
Right.
So you can animate a dragon, and then once you've animated it, like, you don't have to figure out how to make it stay in the air. You can just tell the software to
put it in the air
and it flies. Yeah. Right. So it doesn't have to be aerodynamically sound. Like, none of it has to work. And same thing like with the clothing, you know, like the clothing can like make them look like comically large or like misproportioned or something. And that's okay.
Right. You don't like, question it, because it's just that's the way they're drawn, you know?
Yes.
It's totally good. But like, I think like Stoic in this one, who draw the dad, like in the movie, he is like, you know, he is one of those characters. He's comically big, you know, it's like people's proportions aren't that way.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But then how do you put that on the screen? You just get a, you know, just a guy, and you're like, okay, yeah, we'll just have a guy. And it's like, of course we can't. We'll try and make him more look like a real person version of Stoic. And like, that would not have worked as well.
Right.
And it's like, you know, there's a few moments in there where like Gerard Butler takes some of his armor off and he looks more like a regular person. And in those moments, I feel like the movie, it's like, you're like, well, that's not what Stoic looks like.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But like I would say 90% of the time, he's got his giant bearskin cape thing that he's got on. And Gerard Butler looks, for all intents and purposes, as big as the character in the movie.
Yes.
In the animated movie.
Right. Right.
Right.
And it does feel like there's so few and far between ways to achieve this particular outcome. Like Game of Thrones, I think, did it like a nice job back in the day by having, you know, like the actor who played, is it the Mountain?
Yeah.
He is like literally, I think he's from like Iceland or Norway or, you know, somewhere in that region of the world, but he's like literally like one of like the world's strongest men.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't have like a massive, like, you know, piece
speaking
of,
roles or
speaking
anything.
Role. Yeah. Yeah. It's like they could go and they could just get a physically large specimen of a human being,
yeah,
and kind of allow him to stand there, you know, almost as like a living prop.
Right.
You know, like, because they're, I mean, because he just literally is bigger than everyone.
Exactly.
But
of course, you're also basing that on books rather than like an existing visual canon.
Also true. Also true. Yes. Yeah. But so then, yeah, how do you make Stoic look big? You make his clothes comically large. But like the proportions all ended up seeming just right. Gerard Butler, I thought, did a fantastic job as Stoic.
Oh my gosh, so good, so good. I think that's the character. I was so glad when I found out he was coming back to play that role again, because I feel like that is the one you absolutely had to get right.
Yes,
like because he like his voice is like it's like the voice of Olive Burke. You know, it's like that's the leader, that's the guy.
Yes,
you know, and like, I mean, he's not the main character. Hiccup's the main character, but like, I mean, gosh, I can't remember
Mason Thames.
Yeah, he crushes it. Sound like. He's, you know, I don't know if he's like doing a voice to try and sound more like the original Hiccup, but otherwise he just sounded really good.
He did sound good. And I actually thought it was great to not go, like, we applauded the guys who are working down at Epic Universe right now who are depicting Hiccup, who are using a voice to sound like,
yeah, like going really nasally.
Yeah, like we're Vikings, you know. Like, so they definitely at Universal, they lean into the voice. I thought they just found somebody who physically embodied Hiccup well on their own.
Yeah.
So if he's doing some type of voice modification, then it worked perfect because I wasn't really noticing it. It didn't seem like he was trying to be the animated character necessarily.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I just thought the whole thing was executed in a way that like just showcased storytelling using the live action format in a way that like just rang true. Like it just worked to me.
Yeah, it did. It really did just work. I think this is the other thing I think that really worked for How to Train Your Dragon versus specifically the Disney live action remakes.
Okay.
Is that you've got a lot of what they do with the Disney live action remakes is they are taking the movies they made in like the 30s and 50s and 80s and whatever, and like trying to bring them into the present. And the problem is that like their messaging hasn't aged super well.
Sure.
Or has received, you know, whatever, you know, 80 years worth of criticism and people poking fun at it and stuff like that. Like, you know, Beauty and the Beast or whatever. People are like, how do these people not even know they have a king? And then you have the people making the movie like, well, we have to explain that or whatever, you know. It's like, they're trying to cover up every plot hole people have like poked in it over the years. They're trying to like please like a kind of new audience and update the story and do all these new things. And in doing those things, they can't help but draw tons of comparisons to the old one. It's like people just liked the old one.
Right.
You know, it's like the one was bad. What How to Train Your Dragon has going for it is that it doesn't have any questionable messaging for the most like in the original at all. Like there's no, it's not having to fight against its own story. It's not like, okay, well that joke didn't land very well in 2025, so we need to change that. Or like this story doesn't work as it's like they kind of just got it right the first time.
Sure. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now they're just doing it again and like, they don't have to change anything. So like, why wouldn't they make it shot for shot? You know?
Right. 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 Yes. Yeah. No, exactly.
Whereas, so but then they have like Snow White and it's just like, oh no, now they're going to, I haven't even seen Snow White, but it's like, yeah, we're changing the ending. They're going to be a big fight and it's going to be over this. And it's like the prince will have a reason to fall in love with her. And it's not just that he found her in the woods and
sure.
Stuff like that. And it's like, the answer is like, maybe you just didn't need to remake it, you know?
Well, and yeah, it's like with Snow White, and like, I don't know if like there's something to be said for the fact that like back in the day, just simply executing the film at all. I mean, you're talking about like coming up on 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the 30s. Like, you know, it's the first ever fully animated film ever.
Right.
And, you know, it's like the feat back then, it reminds me a lot of like Avatar, like what James Cameron is doing with Pandora. It's like if you pay attention to the actual stories that James Cameron is telling with those, they're so basic. Like it's Pocahontas. Like
right.
the first one is Pocahontas.
Right.
And that's the story.
Right. And then there's a big star. Then at the end, it's Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
We have big air fight, big land fight, solo fight, go.
Right. Yeah. The Star Wars formula of having three different scale fights all happening at once with all of your characters doing something cool. But that's not the point of Avatar. The point is the spectacle itself.
Right.
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Like when you watch it, you're transported, you know.
Yeah, you're
like,
on Pandora.
Exactly. It's like there's no point in time. And I think we've talked about this here in office a lot. Like, you know, it's easy to think that you don't love the Avatar movies until you're watching them again and you're like, no, this is amazing. Like,
right.
Because you'll get further from them and you're like, yeah, like the story's only so-so. And like, you know, like, I don't know, like whatever. But then when you're watching it again, it's like, no, I'm right back. And so I feel like that's the thing. It's like you go back to Snow White back then. It's like, you know, it's not a terribly long movie, but it's still technically like ticks the mark for feature length film. It's one of the most successful movies of all time. It will always be important to all of like
filmmaking
and cinema. Yeah. Like it is groundbreaking. It broke the rules and it did it. And people wanted to see, you know, what that looked like. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. Then it's different when you're trying to be like, oh yeah, let's take this beloved classic and do it in the modern era and see how that goes.
I know. Like, and then it's like, then people are mad that it's not the same and that you changed it. And then people are be mad that it is, if you know, or that it's the exact same. And the first one was problematic for reasons X.
Yeah.
You know? And then, I mean, Snow White had a whole myriad of like hypocrisy about it.
It was fighting battles in every direction.
Yeah.
On some way, shape, or form. But I also have still not seen it yet. So
yeah.
There's that. But anyway, yeah. So How to Train Your Dragon, I would absolutely recommend it. I thought it was really, really, really cool. I mean, the way that everything ended up coming out, Toothless is great. The acting is great. I thought the girl who played Astrid, Nico Parker, was like amazing.
Like,
if she's on screen, I thought she was just like stealing the show
pretty
like,
much. Oh.
So good. And then Stoic, like I said, yeah, by Gerard Butler, so good. So this isn't really meant to be like a How to Train Your Dragon review episode or anything like that. It's more of the context of of the remakes, because I'm right there. I see all the same headlines. I see all the same articles as everybody else does, where it's like another one.
I know,
but this one's worth seeing.
This one's worth seeing. Definitely. Yeah. If you haven't seen them, see this one. I'd also shout out the music in this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because like, you know, the music in the animated one already extremely good, but this is sort of like they were like, okay, all right,
they know what they know. They, what they've
this
got.
Time we have like we're going live action, and so we're gonna go like where it's the same music, but we're gonna go like big on the music, and it is just like it's like powerful feeling, you know.
Yeah,
it was really, really good. And then also it felt like the entire thing, I don't know where they shot the movie, but it felt like a real celebration of wherever they were shooting.
True. Yeah, like, let's just showcase the beauty of this land.
Yeah. And that is always to a movie's benefit as well. So anyway, How to Train Your Dragon, check it out. Super good.
Transition.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All right, Ben. Yeah. Ben, yeah. This past weekend, me and my family did a very fun thing.
What'd you do?
We went to a Beyblade tournament.
No.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, so the Beyblades, they're back.
They're back. They're not like the commanding every second of my children's attention the way they were for like a month and a half or so.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, it's always like, you know, If one of them gets like a new blade or something, they all come right back out. Everyone still loves it, you know. Okay. The enthusiasm has died down, but the joy of the game, I suppose, has not.
For the love of the game.
For the love of the game. So, the last time I was at a new Pokemon set recently came out called Destined Rivals, and it's like been kind of a hard to get set or whatever. So I went down to the shop to pick up some or see if they had any left, and they did. But while I was there, I happened to notice there was like a flyer at the cash register that said Beyblade tournament. I was like, wait a second, you guys do Beyblade tournaments here? And then I turn around and they sell the stuff there too now. And I was like, what? No way. Not just, and this is the big difference. They don't just sell the stuff like you would get at like Walmart or Target. They've got like the Takari Tomy stuff that you would get in Japan.
Ooh.
So like the real stuff and like there. And I'm like, oh, I mean, not that the Hasbro stuff isn't real, but like,
sure.
It's like, this is the stuff they're not selling at the big box stores. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. So I've got to bring the boys to this thing. So it happens like once a month or whatever. And it was this past weekend. And while I was there, I also got the boys all new blades. Cause I was like, I'm going to go home and just surprise them with it. Cause you know, it was the start of summer and maybe that'll give them something to do for like a couple days.
That's great.
Them or whatever. And so I came down Saturday morning and announced to them, all right, here's what we're doing today. And I was like, we had some errand to run first, but it was like, and then we're going to a Beyblade tournament. And they were like, Luke was just like, wait, what? What? We're going to a tournament? And I mean, it was like lights out. He was so excited about it.
I love it. Yeah. Your kids are so your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes. Oh man. So then, you know, then I didn't entirely know what to expect either. Like, you know, are we going to go and it's going to be, you know, a bunch of, you know, adults? Is it going to be mostly kids? Is it going to be,
yeah, who blades?
You know, yeah. Who blades, you know, how serious are we taking this? You know, is there like, are people like respecting the meta, or is it just a bunch of kids ripping blades and, you know, having fun?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How are we going to do, how's it going to go? So I kind of looked it up a little bit to see like, were there rules, were there things I needed to be aware of and whatever. And it seemed like that you did need to bring like a deck, as it were.
Okay.
You know, which consists of three blades. So those would be like the three you're using.
So you own at least nine blades then?
Oh, we have much more than nine.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, I was like, I'm not gonna compete. Cause I feel like I'm gonna have to supervise,
right?
You know, just want them to have fun or whatever. So I was like, you know what, you guys can use any of mine that you want.
Okay.
You know, which I say mine, I don't care if they ever use them ever, but if I call them mine, then they don't argue about which ones belong to them.
That's, I can see the strategy.
Parenting
here.
Tip.
Yeah.
Just say they're yours and you're sharing with them.
Exactly.
Right? There you go.
Yeah.
So that gave them, you know, then that also opened up the pool from their typical, like the ones they consider their own.
I see.
To balance it out there. So they each picked the three they're going to use, and then I just brought the rest to in case there was like a trading aspect, or like if we got there and people were like, oh wait, you should probably change, do you have this, can we, you should, you know, whatever,
right?
See if you could take advice from people there. But me and Beth headed down to Blade Gaming, which is just happens to be the name of the store as well.
I know. Like no
convenient,
no direct affiliation, yeah,
but
the same.
Yeah, so this is also where I play like my Pokemon tournaments a lot of times, but those are downstairs, this was upstairs.
Oh.
So you head upstairs, and there was, I think there was 20 people who were entered into it, and it was like a wide range, from like maybe like early 20s to like five, which was like Nick and Nate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
were Nick and Nate the youngest, do you think?
There might have been like a little girl who was like four, but she might have been five too.
Okay.
There was like, and I think she was just there because like her brother wanted to come, you know.
Got it.
Yeah. But so yeah, Nick and Nate were definitely on like the lowest end of it for sure.
Okay.
And then otherwise it was like mostly teenagers, maybe some like, maybe people were in their 20s. I don't know.
Okay.
Like, you know, hard to tell.
Yeah.
But ultimately I think it was 20 people in the tournament. We get there and I'm like, okay, yeah, we signed up downstairs, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, if I sign up for a Pokemon tournament, you know, I just sign up and they put my name in the computer and they're like, all right, we'll call you. And I'm like, cool. And they're like, well, do they have accounts? They need to sign up online. And I'm like, what? Sign up online? How official is this? You know?
Are they like in the registry now?
Well, you know, then I had to like go make an account for each of them, which, you know, as I'm doing, I'm like, you need an email address, which of course none of them have. So I'm like, I guess I'll just use mine. But then I have, you know, so me and Beth and like a third rogue email address now represents all three of them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a weird problem.
It's like, I know.
Okay, let me go through all my business emails.
I know. But they're like acting like this is going to take like a bunch of time. And I'm like, oh God, I'm going to fill out the same form like three times and whatever. But it's not. It's like, what's your username and an email address next? And I was like, okay, that you guys are really making whatever.
this is essential.
This is essential, is what you're telling me. Whatever. Right, but right. I guess there's like, you know, World of Beyblade website official. If we're officially signed up, you know, we're in the system. And they start going underway. They've got these like five stadiums, as it were, which are just like the, you know, the we're like what we have out there, you know, where you play the game in.
It's kind of like a plastic, like a like kind of like clear acrylic shell type situation, yeah. And then there's like a dome with like a cog wheel around the edges, and,
yeah.
And then maybe like four little cavities in the corner that if you get yoinked, you might get blasted.
Exactly.
Into
yes. Exactly. So yeah, if you don't know what Beyblades are, it's like. It's like they're called gear sports. That's how they're marketing it now.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're into gear sports,
man. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
All my sports have gear.
Exactly. but it's just like battling tops, you know. So like what they spin on, like the shape that they're spinning on matters. The shape of the blade itself. There's like a big metal disc, and then there's like a ratchet piece in the middle, which like you know helps deflect blows or whatever. Right. And you might think like, yeah, just whoever rips it the hardest wins, right? And you're like, yeah, you think so? You'd think.
Yeah.
And on some level, that's true. You know, and it's on some level, like if you're, you know, a 20-year-old person playing a 5-year-old kid, you're just going to be able to rip your blade harder than them no matter what and probably just win on power alone.
Right.
But if you're a 20-year-old person, you're playing another 20-year-old person and you can both rip it really hard, then all the other little bits start battering a lot more.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yep. Yeah. Because, I mean, there's like offensive, defensive, and like stamina.
Stamina and then like balance as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Balance is like, I don't think people play balance because like normally you just want to specialize in one of the other three.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Or whatever. But so we get there and they start putting up the pairings or whatever. And it's like all of a sudden it's like I was so impressed with all three of my kids who Luke in his very first round was playing against someone who I think went on to win the whole thing. So we got a pretty unlucky draw in the first round.
One, yeah.
Yeah. But and, you know, sure enough, you know, the guys out there, I will say, to all of the competitors who are out there, all the teenagers who played against my kids, just, you know, thank you for being so cool with them.
Oh yeah, sure. You know. That's right, because you could have guys out there who show up and they're like, heck yeah, easy win, let's go. Like,
right.
You know, or it's like, okay, these are young kids, you want to encourage like the prosperity of our activity that we all like together.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you want them to have a good experience.
Right. They're all very helpful. So they weren't just sitting there, you know, like, all right, let me just, you know, blast you out of the arena or anything. You know, they played just regular, just nice, calm, whatever.
Sure.
That was good. And I think so in like Luke's first round, no, like the way the scoring goes is you either get like 1 point if you know your blade just stops spinning before the other one. That's like the most basic.
Okay.
Yeah, the other, like if yours is still spinning, they're stop spinning, then that's 1 point. If you burst them, which means you just, you know, their blade comes apart, which they're pretty easy to come apart, then that's like 2 points. If you send them into the corner pockets, that's 2 points. And then there's like a big like gulch off to the middle. And if you send them in there, that's 3 points. That's like the hardest part to do.
The gulch.
So like Luke's first round, the guy went through and was like 1, 2, 3, point, point, point. You know, the other guy gets them. And then Luke got like a very good lucky bounce and like sent the guy into the gulch. And it was just like, and it's 3-3, you know,
what?
It was like, oh, man. And then I think, you know, if you're the other guy, like, I'm probably going to start pinning a little harder now because, you know,
right.
So I don't think we got another point on him, but it was very funny that happened. And yeah, cause that, I think that's what's sort of fun about this Beyblades in particular is that like, Even if you can rip it a lot harder, sometimes if you rip it so hard, like if it just ricochets off in the wrong direction, it's like, that's just too bad, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I mean, that I was going to say like when I heard that there was competitive play for Beyblades, I think one of the big things that like sort of struck me was like, it feels a little random, like not like it reminds me maybe of like rock, paper, scissors, like, you know, if like whenever we've gone out and played in like the main area or whatever, like if we ripped it like 20 times, like you might win 10, I might win 10.
Right.
You know, like it doesn't necessarily seem like there's a, like, it's like, yeah, you can't beat Jay at this. Like,
right.
You know, or vice versa, or towards anybody in the office at least.
Right.
You know, or even a single blade that seems to win every time.
Right.
But there must be more to it than meets the eye.
Well, certainly, like, you know, whenever we've played, even with the kids and even here at the office, we don't like, you know, we just sort of play with the blade as it comes out of the box. You know, we're not like mixing up the bits and the ratchets and all that stuff very much.
Right.
You know, we're just sort of playing like the way it came in the box. But of course, if you're going to do competitive, it's like, okay, I want this really stability based blade and this like really stability based bit, but that only comes with that one. So you're really buying the bit for this thing and then putting it on this one and, you know,
okay.
Optimizing, yeah. So, all those little things.
Right.
And then the other part of it is that you have like your three blade deck or whatever. So like the way the match would go is like, each person will choose their first one. And then after that point, you both must move to whatever is in like the second slot on your desk. And then after that point, you move to the third one.
Okay.
So after you've each done all three, then you know, if you're good, you know what the other person has now. And then you shuffle your stuff up, like you can choose the new order. And so at that point, you're sort of like maybe trying to like play the other person. Like, what do they think I'm going to do? What am I going to put up front?
Okay.
And stuff like that. And like it, even as I was watching, it became like clear, like there was one matchup Luke was playing against the kid, and they both had like every kid's favorite one is the Soar Phoenix. It's red. It comes with a red launcher. It's the one they use in the show.
Okay.
You know, it's actually fairly competitive, you know. It looks cooler than the rest of them.
Naturally.
And so both kids had that. But then Luke had this like one, which I've since looked up afterwards, called Silver Wolf, which is one of mine, I guess. And I was letting him use that. That one's also very competitive. And I was noticing that every time Luke used Silver Wolf against an opposing Soar Phoenix, he was winning.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, I see. So like, it definitely matters. Like this one will pretty much always beat that one, even though they're both pretty good.
Okay. Okay.
Like, you know, even if it's like Luke could rip it a little bit harder than Nick and Nate for sure.
Okay.
Like, you know, he had just enough oomph to like give him a little bit better chance here and there. But we got like three rounds in, and you know, I think at that point all three kids were like, you know, 1 and 2, but they each like won a match.
That's
which
awesome.
Was exciting.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, even if Nick and Nate were like five going up against like much older people, they would just sit there and just stare up at them, and they would do it like it was completely serious. They had like no fear, no embarrassment at all. Like that to me was the most impressive thing.
No, and that is, I mean, I think that like that bravery, like there is something that I think that always threw me off my center, like no matter what sport I was doing, no matter how prepared I was for anything, like even the best I've ever been at anything was rock climbing. And I remember going to a climbing competition once at our home gym, which I went to like 4 to 5 days a week. And as soon as it was like a competition environment, like everything changed for me. Like the way I was touching the rocks, the way I was like chalking up, like I was like overthinking all of it. It was just like, I'm not doing well,
yeah.
You know, like this is like my worst, like I would do better any other day at the gym, just goofing off.
Right.
And instead now I'm competing and it's like, I'm ruined.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very impressed. Like even like Nate, especially, he would just like, he'd just be making conversation with whoever he was playing against. You know, they'd be like 18 and he'd be like, you're using that. I've got one of those, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
Just like so adorable to see them just talking to it and having fun. Like Nate was like, and of course everyone's being super helpful to them because they're like such kids.
Yeah.
But like Nate was over there, like he made, you know, he clearly, whoever he played against was clearly like, oh, you know, do you want to see some of the stuff I've got? And you know, he helped him, like, you know, he said, you know, which one's your favorite that you've got? And he showed him like his favorite, like wizard, you know, blade or whatever. And he's like, okay, cool. Let me see. I think I've got some cool parts that can help you, like, you know, upgrade that one. And he's like, you can use it for the rest of the day or whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so like he helped him build like a much more competitive version of that one, which was, you know, that was really cool. And then, you know, Nate was very happy with that and stuff.
That's really neat.
Yes.
That's a special experience. And shout out to that person.
Yeah.
Just being like, yeah, like let's have fun with this.
Yes. Yes. So that was all very good. I think at the end of the day, I think Nick and Nate ended up with like two wins each, but Luke, this is what made the whole day. It was so funny. Like we're in round five. Luke has won two matches. So he's playing against this other kid. He looks like he's maybe like 14, 15. And Luke, I would say, probably had the best deck of my kids.
Okay.
Okay. He had, not going to matter. Doesn't matter. But they're going through the first round here. And just, you know, Luke's ripping them as hard as he can. And I think he just like lucked out that he had like good matchups per blade or whatever. And he, you know, he sent the guy into the pockets a couple times and he got something in the gulch and he like ends up winning the first round. And you're like, oh my gosh, like you're playing against like a teenager and you're like beating them right now. They could definitely rip it harder than you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could tell the other kid was like, you know, I felt bad for the other kid because he's, you know, no one wants to lose to the kids, you know.
Sure.
You want to be nice to them. You want to encourage them. But like, this is also how you're spending your Saturday, you know.
That's true.
You didn't come here to lose to 7 year olds.
Okay? Right. Right.
But my goodness. So we're in, we're in now round two. So you have to go, you have to play to 4 points, and then you had to win, and then that's best of three like that. So Luke wins round one. So now it's, if he gets the four first, he wins. And if the other kid gets the four, they go to round three.
Okay.
Right. So they're going in there and they're launching it. They have a couple misfires. And then it is Silver Wolf against Silver Wolf. This is the blade from earlier.
Okay.
And they both rip them in there, and I don't know what happened. I mean, you and I have played a bunch out in there, and you know as well that sometimes when those things slam into each other, it's like they slam off in other directions. It's like really chaotic sometimes.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's like, yeah, because you start with like this like perfectly, you know, reflective black plastic, you know, like half dome bowl type situation that, yeah, that they're skating around in. Then you got like the clear top, and it's like after you've played with it for, I don't know, you know, 10 hours of playtime or whatever, that thing is dinged and scratched and like,
yeah.
I mean, it's got some serious wear and tear.
It absolutely does. And how would you describe any individual Beyblade?
Like a metal,
like the disc.
Like, I mean, I don't know. They look like blades, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a chop saw blade, or like a, you know, like if you're going to like cut a piece of wood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a rigidy type of.
But edge. like a thick piece of metal.
Yeah. Like a thick piece of metal.
Yeah. It's a thick piece of, not a blade. It's not sharp.
Right.
Yeah. No, that would be so dangerous.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. No. But you know, the same general, like spirally, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. So anyway, they both launch their Silver Wolves in there, and the two slam into each other. And I wish I was filming it. I wish I was filming it, because what happens is Luke's opponent's blade gets shattered. Just like the metal itself breaks. It breaks away. The blade is not usable.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And like they're built to burst, you know, like one of the ways you score points is by bursting them, by which I mean like the blade comes apart from the ratchet, comes apart from the bit. This was the blade itself coming apart from itself. And like it came off so loud and so fast that like the piece of metal that went missing got lodged in the side of the stadium, which is pretty thick plastic, and made a hole in it. And all of a sudden, everyone turns around and is like, wait, what just happened? What just happened? What just happened? And like, it taken everyone a second to figure it out. And we're like, and the kid picks up his blade and he's like, oh, my blade broke. And everyone's like, that kid broke your blade?
Oh, and it's, man.
Like, I mean, like a bunch of them are his friends. So everyone starts giving him a hard time that like this 7-year-old smashed his blade apart, which was, I mean, hilarious. And then everyone is like high-fiving Luke and stuff.
Oh my God.
And like, Luke is just like, oh my God, I broke, you know. He's like drinking it in. He's having a good time. And then they discover the missing piece of the blade, which is lodged in the stadium. And then everyone's like coming in and taking pictures of it. And there's, I mean, it's like a piece of metal just like lodged in there.
You sent me the pictures. I was literally like, I didn't even think this was possible. Like,
yeah.
Because we here in office have our own sets, and you and I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back too aggressively, we can launch those.
Oh yeah. We can launch them.
Like we go hard.
Yeah.
Especially because we're not like, you know, we're not even playing the game. The fun for us is just seeing how aggressively you can pull it.
Yeah.
And then watch.
Right. Yeah. We're rarely like keeping score.
Right.
Or anything. Right. Yeah. Just want to see the carnage. And boy was there, because I mean, the guy had to go, like, he had to find someone else there who had another Silver Wolf that he could borrow to then resume play with. Thankfully, like, someone had it.
Per regulation,
lest otherwise he might have had to just drop. That would have been too bad for him.
That would have been. So then Luke would have moved forward further.
Yeah. Then Luke. So at that point, though, Luke had already had 2 points in the second round. So Luke needed 2 points to get to 4, which would win him the match or whatever. So the kid, his opponent, finds another silver where someone lends it to him. And they restart the match. Luke, that point didn't count because there was like a break, you know, or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
Very rare. No one had ever seen it happen. So that was very exciting. Luke was like, do you just think maybe that'll be in the paper tomorrow? And I was like, probably not. But But that'd be pretty cool.
I love the sense of scale in his mind that this, like, you know, 20-person Beyblade tournament in the second floor of a game shop is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's like, because probably to him, it's like, there's so much going on. It's like such a big deal.
Absolutely.
I mean, it reminds me of, like, when I was a kid and we would go do like 5Ks and they would, like, you know, announce the age group awards or whatever. And in my head, I was like, well, these people are basically famous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, exactly. So it's like, there are still people who I've seen from childhood who won age group award medals, like running out on the greenway and stuff. And I'm like, oh, dang. It's them.
Yeah, I know.
In the flesh.
Exactly. That's how our cross country coach was. You know?
I know. Yes.
We went to like all these 5Ks and he would just flat out win them.
Win them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like,
and then he showed up as our coach. It was like, what? We're going to be unstoppable.
We were okay.
Yeah. Turns out. But so anyway, he finds his new blade and they resume play. And I'm feeling pretty bad for this kid because now, like, he's just lost. His blade was broken by, you know, the 7-year-old in the room.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Not only that, he's behind in the match.
Right.
You know, and if I'm him, I'd be feeling like, I really got to turn this around, like, now.
Right.
Like, I gotta launch this hard. I gotta end this. I can't walk away, like, embarrassed and beaten, you know.
Right.
And so they launch the blades and they collide into each other again and they spin around a little. And Luke's gets a good spin off the wall, sends this kid into the pot. It and Luke wins the match.
Oh my gosh.
I could not believe it. I felt so bad for that kid because a kid just smashed my blade to the cheers of everyone in the room and then I lost to him. With everyone watching. So I felt really bad for that kid. But also, I was so proud of Luke. I was like, oh my gosh, you just beat like a teenager, dude. That was insane.
That's great.
Yeah, that was really exciting. So, but that was the end of round 5. And so, you know, that's what they said at the beginning. Like, okay, that, you know, Swiss, it'll be 5 rounds of Swiss or whatever. And we're like, okay, cool. But then we're going to leave and someone comes and like pulls me back. They're like, oh, well, you can't leave yet. He made top 8. And I was like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, now there's a top 8 bracket. And I was like, Luke made top 8? We get back and sure enough, he's in 8th place for the whole tournament. And so the way it works is after 5 rounds, whatever the standings are, if you're in the top 8, then you're in a single elimination, like bracket style tournament. So like Luke has to like stay and continue to compete.
Wow.
And oh my gosh. And then they announce like that, you know, okay, so the way the tournament will work is, you know, if you get first place, you get like $30 of store credit and second place is like $20 and everyone else will get 10. So I'm like, oh my God, Luke, no matter what, you're going to get at least $10 of store credit, you know, and like now the prospect of like even more riches on the table or whatever. And Luke is like, oh man, oh man. Now, unfortunately, being seeded 8th meant that per bracket rules, he's seeded against the number 1 seed in round, who happened to be his first opponent.
Oh. So,
did we just blip? Nope.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I thought
okay. Yeah. So, and definitely now that we're in the top 8 round, he was still very cool about it or whatever, but it was definitely like I'm definitely going to have to go hard on you now.
Yeah.
And so we didn't score any points. I was hoping we would get like a good accidental bounce, like somewhere in there, and that Luke would get some points. But man, I took video of it. You should see Luke's stance. I mean, he is like in a power stance. He's down low. He's ripping it. It was so fun to watch. And ultimately, he finished 8th. He got his $10 of store credit, and that was like, you know, just the whole world to him. But he went downstairs and picked out a toy and, you know, got some candy, and it was a great day.
I feel like very, very, very early on the pop, we talked a lot about like Disney magic and like the way that like when you go to the parks, it's sort of like the staff is almost like designed to like try to like give you a like very special experience, because you like if you can experience one of those Disney magic things, then it's sort of like this just it's kind of like it's like the gift that keeps on giving. Like it makes you always feel like this place is going to take care of you and like more good things will happen and blah blah blah. And I feel like we told stories about like when we were kids and like our dad took us like fishing on the James River for the first time. Like I think we caught 50 fish that day.
Yeah,
like, it was like and I mean I would be willing to wager that like the first day I ever went like proper fishing, like where I was like taking the fish off by myself and you know tying my own lines and doing everything, like was is probably still in like a top 5 fishing day of my whole life.
Right.
You know. which, I mean, it's not like we're aggressive fishermen or anything like that, but it was like, it went as well as somebody who was attempting to deliver you to a new interest as well as it possibly could have gone.
Right.
It was like, this is what a great day fishing is.
Yeah.
And now you can always chase that again.
Right.
And I feel like it's almost like you guys kind of had that.
Like, it did feel like that. And it started out a little iffy too, because you know, Luke was eventually seated against this guy who was like our number one player. And that was like his first match. And I think he was so excited, like, we're going to a tournament, and he walked out of the first match feeling like, well, this just isn't fair. Like, we're against such older kids.
Yeah.
You know, why is it fair to have little kids against big kids? And you're like, well, you're right. I mean, you're right. It's not. And I kind of was like, it'll filter down, because of course, like, eventually the way Swiss goes is that you play people with the same record. So like, as the other kids lose their matches, probably you'll just be paired against them. Like,
right.
That, and that is what happened eventually. And they all, you know, eventually scored wins against the other kids and stuff, which was fun. But then, yeah, Luke managed to like claw his way into like an actual victory against the real opponent. And then, you know, make a top eight, which is just exciting.
That is very exciting.
So
that is very exciting. And I feel like Beyblades is such a great way to do this too, because like, it seems like it'd be a lot harder to go in there in something that has like a deep, deep strategy, like some of the like, you know, Pokemon or Magic Gathering or,
yes,
you know, Yu-Gi-Oh or some of the other games that kind of get tossed around inside of this environment. Like, this is a great one where it's like, where that rock, paper, scissors element, I think, is so perfect, because it means that they can go and actively participate without just getting absolutely trounced.
Exactly. Like, there is enough like randomness that you might get a fun rogue point here and there.
Sure.
And if you're a kid and you score a couple of points on like a much bigger opponent, then that feels really cool, even if you lose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that'd be like, you know, if you went and played a pickup game with like a college basketball player, and it's like I just scored.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. I think I want to say that one of the twins' opponents at one point was like an adult, and like, you know, he won the first round, no problem. And then I think like during the whole second round, he was just sort of like soft launching to like let them score points on him.
Okay.
And then like in the third round, he's like, okay, cool. Like, I'm glad, you know, he was happy to like let them get some points, but he wasn't about to like lose the round.
Sure.
So then, you know, he like kicked it up again. Yeah. But I was like, I really appreciated that. Like, you know, like, good for you. Thank you for letting them get some points, you know.
Faith in humanity restored to a proper level.
Well, it's like everyone's like that. I think because Beth came with us too, and she was like there helping, you know, manage the chaos or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, she hadn't been to like any of these, you know, like card game style tournaments or card store style tournaments before.
Right.
And she was like, everyone was just so nice. Like, everyone was like really helpful and really like considerate. And I was like, yes, I know. Everyone's always so nice, aren't they? But yeah, that's because that's always how it is. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Anyway, that was Luke's blade bashing introduction to the competitive scene of Beyblades.
Wow.
Will
there be more?
I was so like, I left there and I was like, my cup was so full. I was just like, I was so proud of all of them, and for Luke to have like actually done well too, I was like, this was amazing. I was like, I went home, I was like, I am looking up like official like optimal builds and things, you know.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, I'm ready to spend money now.
send him in with the best foot forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right. Let's do some real stuff now.
Right.
And then I was like, as I looked through it, I was like, you know what? It's less surprising that Luke did well, because all three of the blades he ended up using were like, well, two of his three were like genuinely competitive blades.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So that was, I was like, ah, that probably tracks. Like and then it turns out the most competitive blade we actually do own, and no one used it. And I was like, well, that's a bummer.
No, that's too bad.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Next time.
Next month. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. That was it. Beyblades. So much fun, especially if you have kids, or if you don't have kids, if you're an adult, also fun.
The spin continues.
Yes. If you know what? If you have nephews, you will be their favorite aunt or uncle, I promise you.
Well, I did.
Ben did introduce this entire world to us.
I'm so glad that it has panned out this well.
Dude, me too. So much fun.
Oh, man. All right, one last quick little transition.
Let's do it.
Okay, Jay. So yes, you said that you're leaving the Beyblade tournament, filled your cup, and I actually similarly had like a wonderful kind of weekend myself, because Alice's dad has like a piece of property out sort of like just in the hills in the country here in Southwest Virginia. So the game plan for doing Father's Day with him meant that we were going to be going out to his land where we're going to be able to go camping just for a single evening with some of Alice's sisters and her dad, and like, so we got to go out there. I got to bust out like all my gear and all my equipment and everything and do more camping stuff, which I continued to just absolutely love. I actually, this was like the real statistic that I felt like was the absolute marker that I have found something I truly genuinely enjoy, is that across like the 3 nights of camping that I've done with Addison so far this summer, I think I probably have a cumulative of about 6 to 7 hours of sleep total.
Oh my goodness.
Not an average night of sleep of 6 to 7. Total sleep.
Right.
Because it's definitely been something where, and on some level, you know, there's the fun of like, you know, having s'mores and stuff like that, which certainly introduces a significant amount of sugar into the equation, right?
No
there,
doubt.
You
no
know,
doubt.
Circa bedtime hours and everything, which is okay. It's okay. Cause I think that the real point is that like, even with as little sleep as I have gotten, it has not held me back from having fun to the max at any point in time. It's like, you know, I'm tired in the middle of the night, like while I'm not sleeping or while I'm trying to like keep her happy or, you know, get her settled back down or, you know, whatever the case may be. But like, you know, you get up in the morning and you're just like, let's keep going, you know, let's do more things. Let's have more fun. And so that's been really wonderful. And, you know, just getting to, you know, get that time in. But there was a couple of like really cool things that were going on as well. One of them is that like, I've been really determined to have Addison not be like fearful of, like little critters. So whether it's, you know, like insects or bugs or anything like that, like, you know, if we ever encounter something, I always try to make like a really big deal to go and handle it myself, like pick it up, hold it, let it like crawl on my hand, like let her touch it if she wants to. And, you know, basically try to explain everything that I can about the creature to her.
Right.
You know, so that like that maybe she has like a, I don't know, I don't really think it's like trying to like teach her like, you know, like respect or anything like that. Mostly just that like a lot of these things can't hurt you, you know, like it's never fun to realize you have like a bug crawling up your arm or something like that. But like it's not going to cause harm. And I think that's the kind of general confidence that I'm attempting to build. But it ended up being really cool because, you know, we were out there and we were chasing like the fireflies were like on proud display. So there was this like one moment like where Addison's youngest sister Madison came over and she had caught like 3 of them, and she's like, Addison, I gotta show you something really cool. And she opens up her hand and all 3 of them light up at once and just sort of like fly off into like the setting sun,
right?
And it's just sort of like gorgeous and beautiful, and Addison immediately thought it was cool. So like we go over into this field, and so me and Addie are just like literally like holding hands running through the field catching fireflies and like, you know, watching them light up, watching them fly away, like trying to catch them again. And, you know, like, you know, then she would like spot one light up and she'd be like, Daddy, over here. And like, you know, she'd grab my hand, like we would go chase it down and catch it. And it was like, it was just super, like, I don't know, it's like one of those moments that I feel like will just like live with me forever, because it's just like so pure,
right?
And like it's the kind of thing that was and these are, it seems like these are always the best moments. It's like, you know, you can plan cooking over the fire, you can plan the s'mores, or, you know, bring music or treats or fun, you know, drinks, or, you know, a sleeping bag, like all the tent, like whatever. Like, there's things you can account for. Then there's the things you can't. And that was one of them. And then also right there next to the campsite was like a small like retention pond. So it's not like a, it's not necessarily like a decorative pond or anything like that. It's just sort of like where the water pools, and, you know, it's got like a natural bottom and like whatever, and it's full of frogs. And again, Alice's youngest sister, Madison, was fantastic at catching the frogs. So that was another one that ended up being like a total hit, was like Addison kept being like, I want to go catch more frogs. And so where she was a little hesitant to handle the fireflies, for whatever reason, she was completely fine with the frogs.
Wow.
Yes. So like, you know, we would have them like in our cupped hands or whatever, and we like kind of open it up because you don't want them to like, you know, jump away or get lost in the grass and not
right,
be able to
yeah.
make their way back to the water or anything, you know. So like we're kind of like, you know, we're like, Addie, do you want to try to like hold it? And she's like, okay. And she literally, like, with her tiny little delicate hands, she reaches forward and, like, grabs it, like, right, like, exactly the way that you're supposed to, like, handle it. She picks it up, she puts it in her palm, and I mean, she's like running around showing everyone, like,
I'm holding a frog.
And I mean, it was just the cutest thing in the world. And it was like, then we'd be like, okay, I think we need to go put the frog back in the water. Now she's like, okay. And you know, she was so good at, like, taking it so seriously, she just, like, put her little hands in the water and let it, like, swim away. And oh man, it was just wonderful. It was just really, really cute to watch her, like, you know, interact with nature. And you know, she's just like walking around barefoot and like doing all of her little camping things. So I don't know. It was just, you know, we were leaving and we all had such a great time. And, you know, we were in the car and Alice was like, what was your favorite part? And I was like, my favorite part was just Addison. Just like
all of it. Yeah.
Everything
she did.
Everything she did was my favorite part, because like it really was. It was so like cute. Like, you know, like at home, it's so often the case that like if we're not doing an activity, then the obvious outcome is boredom. You know, it's like,
right.
It's like, you know, like, oh, I'm bored. There's nothing to do.
Oh,
you know,
let me, like, tell you what I do not care about is when my kids tell me they're bored. I'm like, tough. I don't care. That is I find they're often really bored when I ask them to do chores or anything. Yeah. When you go change your clothes or something, I'm like, oh, I'm too tired. I'm bored. And I'm like, that's not a reason.
Yeah.
This would be something to do.
Right.
I don't care.
I gave you an activity.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it was cute because, like, you know, there would be like moments where there wasn't like an obvious activity for Addison to be engaged with, and whether like I was cooking or people setting up tents or like whatever. And she has like her little like camp chair, which is just like the folding chairs that anybody would bring to any sporting event, whatever. And so she's got it like all extended, and like, you know, she'd like walk over to it and just sort of like sit sideways in it with like her legs sort of like dangling off the edge. And you know, she'd just like sit there and chill and like play with like a piece of grass or something. Nice. It's like
classic.
It was classic. It was really good. It's just kids being outside doing outdoor kids things. So yeah, continue to just break in all of my equipment, continue to play with things. My enthusiasm for going camping by myself is like still
it's climbing up there.
It really is. It's like, and what's really interesting about it is that like they're like, and I'm almost afraid to like even talk about it, you know, like on the pop or something like that, but it's like I do kind of want to like film it and just sort of like see what happens, you know, like not have a plan but have enough of a plan that the plan is to record something,
right,
and see what comes of it,
right,
you know, because in the same way that camping provides the opportunity to like, you know, sit there and shave the end of a stick to turn it into a roasting fork or whatever for a s'more, you know, or whittle like a utensil or something, like,
right,
there would be something about camping by myself where I wouldn't be tending to the other like people, and I might have the ability to like focus on filming like an insect crawling on like a piece of grass, you know, right, and like really like having fun capturing that moment.
Right.
You know, shooting animals, as it were.
Shooting animals.
With your camera.
Yeah.
I had so many people bring up that accidentally just last week's episode. I've had people bring that up to me all week.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, good. Yeah.
It's been great. It's been great. So anyway, yep. The camping adventures continue. Oh, the other thing I was gonna say is that my father-in-law was there. And, you know, he has a big parcel of land. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know, like 20 to 30 acres or something.
It's fairly big.
Yes. He has like a shed, you know, the exact type of like metal building that I've always coveted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could shoot a basketball inside of that thing if you so desired.
With a camera.
With a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With a camera. You can, yeah. I got up. I was like, yeah, I could film shooting the basketball. And then I was like, oh no, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Shoot a basketball.
Right.
Yeah. With a camera. He has like race cars and tractors and riding mowers and just, you know, like all the things. And there's definitely like the like being good enough for your father-in-law aspect of being out there. So I felt like I was really on my, you know, my P's and Q's and whatnot.
I see.
Trying to trying to deliver, trying to make sure, trying to impress. It's like you just want to be like, I know how to cut wood and build a fire and stuff. I was building the fire, which I've done like, you know, I don't know, thousands of times, and I'm like, I'm gonna screw it up. I know it. And if there's ever a time, and like, you know, I'm like using like my little kindling cracker to make like small pieces of wood, and he's even asked me, he's like, why are you cutting it down so small? And I'm like, oh, this is probably wrong. I bet I'm doing it wrong.
Right.
Like, I was like, I don't know.
Because it's fun. I don't know.
Got to build up a bed of coals, you know, even cooking surface and stuff. Like, maybe I've got a reason for that, or maybe I'm just bad at this. I don't know. But yeah, so there's that. It's such a thing. I had it the whole day leading up to going. I was like, you know, I was like running through like all your answers.
Head.
Like, you're just like, what am I going to do? Like, how do I do it? You know, like, what if I don't set up my tent quickly enough? Like, these are the things we can be judged for.
Indeed.
He was so complimentary of everything I did, though. So it wasn't a problem.
Well, there you go. Good job.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Continue to do it.
Yes.
Live to fight another day. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now maybe I've built up enough credits where I can embarrass myself next time and it would still be okay.
Yeah, probably.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of the episode.
Okay.
Beyblades, camping, and How to Train Your Dragon.
There you go. What a day. What a weekend.
What a weekend.
Yes. Yep,
it was good times. But y'all, as always, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. If you'd like to send us any feedback for this show, you can do so at popcornculturepod@gmail.com, or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.